Welcome to 101.9, your favorite station, High FM. Today's day. What is today?
Thursday.
The 15th. The 15th day of the month of December.
August.
I want to go there. Yes, I want to go there. Yeah. So the 15th day of the month of August, we basically, a month after, are you finishing coughing, Sunshine? Good.
Yes.
Everybody knows the cough was from Moshe Starograd. So, yeah, today I've got a very special guest. So, she's a former, or not former, what is it, reservist colonel in the Israeli army. I'm proud to have her here. Her name is Chani Kaspi. Yes?
Yes.
Chani Kaspi. I think I read few things about Chani before, and I was very impressed. And when Sasha Starr, which is here in the studio right now with us, thank you, Sasha. Thank you for coming back here. When Sasha told me about I really urged to see her. I saw her last night. Yeah, I like thoughts. I like what she represents, and we managed to get her to the studio. So we've got about 40 minutes to talk to her about Ha and Da, we say in Hebrew. But we're going to talk to her all about to hear her opinion and how do we get the public opinion about Israel a little bit better, and the public that we care about. We don't care about the rest.
No, we care about everybody.
Do we?
Yes.
All right. We see it. It looks like this sounds like a Polish mummy. She gets everybody. So, no problem. We're going to start the show. And right now, I've got to my left-hand side, dear, sitting very quietly today, Mr. Peter Feldman. How are you doing, Peter?
I'm doing fine. I'm still recovering from watching 3.5 hours of Apocalypse Now last night.
So how was it?
It was amazing.
Was it good?
It's re-edited. It's redone. It's digitally mastered.
Really good?
It was. If you saw the original in 1979, it's 40 years since it was first made, with very young Martin Sheen, very young Robert Duvall, very young people. And it came with, things haven't changed. War hasn't changed. It still gives the same message so many years later, and it resonates with people. It was a full house. It was a special at the IMAX in Madrid.
Well, what do you think about it?
I thought it was brilliant at its time, and now that it's been remastered, the music's been heightened, and there's an interview with Francis Ford Coppola, the guy who made it, who conceived it, and he tells you all about how the wars have changed. It's become more mechanized, and I mean, we've got a Colonel Inch, you'll be able to tell you about what's going on. But I think one has to see it, especially when you haven't seen it before. It's for a new generation of people who've never seen it before. You've seen it, Roy.
I've seen it, but like you said, it was 35 years ago. How many years
40
ago?
Years ago.
40 years ago. 40 years ago. You know, different state of mind, different kind of person, different,
a very young Martin Sheen. I mean,
40 years ago, I wasn't even married. I mean, think about that. I mean, I was like, I was like a person.
He looks like his son. His Martin's son. The infamous, who he is.
Yeah,
Charlie.
I love him from 2.5 Men. It's like, for me, he's almost half an idol. The first idol was Al Bundy from...
Al Bundy, yes.
From Married with Children. The second one...
Well, he's in the Modern Family now.
He's great. Ed O'Neill. All right, so we've got with us Chani. How are you, Chani?
Very good. Although it's not my normal voice, you have to say.
She's got a nicer voice. So yesterday we heard her, but it was very cold at Jersey Blue. The windows were open, the doors were open, and she was talking through to the night. Oh, by the way, we won, eh?
We won.
Yeah, we did win. So, all right. So, first of all,
Okay,
no,
I'm
not talking about the Israeli army.
No, the Liverpool. I know it. I have two sons at home and husband.
Both like Liverpool.
They like soccer, they like Liverpool, yes.
Oh, here you go. So then we're already friends. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So, why don't try? Well, we're all Liverpool, yeah, and Tottenham fan, yeah. But anyway, I mean, not everybody's perfect. So, last night I had you lecturing at Josie Blue, and I must say, it was cold there, and your voice gone.
A little bit.
No, it's not bad. You still sound okay. It's all right.
Okay.
Sounds very sexy.
Do your best. So first of all, I've got it's the greatest pleasure having you here. Will you just tell us a little bit about your background, then we can start talking.
I began my service in the IDF in very domestic issues. I joined the army after I studied law in the university. This is a special program. We call it Academic Reservist. So I was a legal advisor for many years. I dealt with legislation. I went to the Knesset. I went to the High Court of Justice. And I dealt with issues of recruitment to the IDF, medicine and law, and such things. To the international arena, I went to a mission in Chicago, which we helped the prosecution in Illinois to bring to trial a terrorist. Mm-hmm. And then I thought to myself, okay, you did a lot to the IDF, to the domestic issues, to promote law and order in the IDF. What about the international arena? And after 1 year, I was elected to be the defense attaché to the Netherlands and Belgium and the huge defense forces of Luxembourg, and also the IDF representative to NATO. In 2009, just the beginning of my tenure there, CAST-led operation took place in Israel. CAST-led operation is the operation that we made in Gaza in the beginning of 2009. And then I realized, I heard the criticism towards Israel, and I began to talk about it and to deal with it. I would like to say some word about CAST-led. For the audience, the Jews, perhaps they know these funny words. In Hebrew, it's Oferet Yetzuka. And they came from the famous song of Bialik, that the father brought to his son a dreidel from CAST-led Oferet Yetzuka for Chanukah. So for the Israeli, it will be clear that we went to an operation during Hanukkah. But what about the international community? They didn't understand those words. And when they asked me, and I told them this is a song, and I even sang the song. I won't bother you today because my voice is not okay.
And my guitarist is broken, yeah. Yeah.
But German guy told me we play with lead during Christmas and New Year ceremonies, yeah, yeah, etc. And we thought that you went to Gaza to smash them.
Whoa.
So I brought this knowledge to the IDF. And when the IDF went to another operation, unfortunately, into Gaza in 2014, I remind them that we have to call the name of the operation like it is, protection. So we called in Hebrew the operation in 2014, Tzuk Eitan, which means solid cliff. But in English we call it protective edge. So all over the world they must understand we didn't want to go to this operation. We just want to protect our citizens, our inhabitants, and to bring peace and stability to the state of Israel. And sometimes it's necessary to do such a operation or campaign, you name it.
I want to ask you something. You know, we continue beating around the bush. When it comes to Israeli foreign affairs, I mean, our prime minister is really doing a great job. I think no one else did such a great job, before him. And, right now in the foreseeing future, there's no one that can do, even close to the job he's doing right now. He's highly respected and whatever. And I know there's people say, yeah, he's corrupt and whatever. But if we put that stuff aside, Israel, grown as a financial powerhouse in the last at least 12 years and 10 of them in, 12 of them in Benjamin Netanyahu, when he was prime minister, don't you think it gives us the edge to actually be and talk in the international arena much more than before? We've been the little, how do you say, the financial power actually gave us the voice, the bigger voice to talk, and so people can actually listen to us, especially lately when with the new affairs that we have with the so-called modest Muslim countries like Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, I don't know who's the rest, like Dubai and them.
I told you I began to deal with the international arena.
That's why I'm asking you.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. And I witnessed that the Israelis, sometimes they don't understand even the criticism towards them. It's easy to criticize Israel. You do it like that. Why? Because a child in Ramallah get up in the morning and he says to the world, listen, I'm under occupation. Please help me. The word occupation, immediately, all the international community translate it to quality. They don't offer you normal life. You can go to Ramallah and see if it's true, but that's the one word that can defeat us.
But let's say it's true. When is the last time somebody complained about China occupying Tibet? I mean, and it's real occupation. I mean, when is the last time that happened? So why don't we just boil it down to a normal thing, like the regular thing? I mean, we can boil it down, everything, to anti-Semitism, because it doesn't matter what it is and where it is. And yesterday he said something which is great, which is what I was singing here for the last, I don't know how many years, into South African radio stations, and all of them, not only that one. Israel is not the occupier. Israel, the state of Israel, established in 1948, And before that, there was no Palestinians. In 1948 till 1967, they had the territories where they want us to go back to. So I don't understand what happened before. Why suddenly?
So, as I told you, when you hear the word,
you know, this discussion should have been over 4 or 5 hours, not over 40 minutes, but all right.
I know. Because when they use this word, that actually, legally speaking, we need to maintain a law and order in the West Bank. So we use this as a reference. We are occupiers to maintain the laws of occupation in the West Bank. We need it. But basically, after the Oslo Accord in 1993, we divided...
Oslo crime, you mean? Crime against the Israeli
army. I'm not a politician, please. Well, but yesterday, I wanted to say something that afterwards, and I didn't say, and afterwards I thought about it.
You must say it here, no one listening. Between us.
I went to China, and we have a sort of relationship with the Chinese. You know, the Chinese are unique in the respect of anti-Semitism. They don't understand this. And they admire the Israelis. And they talk to me and they say, you know what is your problem? As you said, you are like the Chinese. You are strong, very strong, but you are not strong enough. If the entire world condemn the Chinese, they can say, as we say in Hebrew, nana banana.
Who cares?
The Russians. Who cares?
They just took over the Krim Island without a problem.
No. Another thing that I told you yesterday, the name of the game is legitimacy. And even the Russia, listen to me, even the Russia, when they want to do something, they try to gain legitimacy. You ask yourself, they don't care, but they want to gain legitimacy.
Sure.
Conquered Crimea, they said it's not us, it's the Russians forces, pro-Russian forces, but it's not us. Why they have to say that? Yep. They don't care. Because the name of the game in the world today is legitimacy. And what the Palestinians and the Arab and the Muslim, when they are against Israel, they use legitimacy as a weapon against us. So they want to say, you are occupier. So the child in Ramallah said that, and the entire world gave him his empathy and the sympathy and everything. But the child in Tel Aviv, if you ask him, please answer him. We have to spend 5 hours, you tell me here, to give the proper
100%.
Answer. So this is the problem. Secondly, I can tell you that the Israelis sometimes, they don't understand, they don't listen to the criticism. And they don't understand how to answer because they feel that they are just and right. They feel that they do what they want to protect themselves.
How can you explain to an Israeli, to an average Israeli, this is just, I mean, what is, 14 years ago, exactly 14 years ago, I think 14 years and a couple of days ago, we just handed over the Gaza Strip, call it. Am I right? Just about 14 years ago, we just gave the Gaza Strip.
Now
we
gave them a full independence.
No, it's what it was. A proper okay. You call it disengagement. You call it disengagement, and I'll call
this
it.
This is the official word.
All right. So disengagement. Yeah, whatever. I couldn't even say the word. I'm so cross.
Disengagement.
So Israel left beautiful places, and beautiful places. I mean, how beautiful it was.
Bloomy.
Yeah, and we left, gave everything, and. What you see right now, it's a couple of years later, there was a Hamas was chosen to be the ruler instead of the PLO, and right now we see only chaos there, and I don't know, people saying about occupation, where are we exactly occupying? It's under Hamas government, they're supposed to be their own sovereigns of their own land, they're shooting at us rockets, and we cannot do nothing. I mean, we are proud of our defense system. I mean, how stupid are we? We are proud of our defense system. I mean, we're defending our citizens. We're supposed to, yeah.
So I would like to say that your point is excellent, because Gaza is an example that to say to the Israeli, just pull to the 67 border and the world will be very good, and you will be safe, and it will be peace in the Middle East and in the entire world. This is... what I can say, ridiculous, nonsense, etc. And the example is, as you say, in Gaza. Gaza is something that we can explain to the entire world that we are just and right, because they always blame us. Settlers, occupier. You said it's right. We are not occupying in Gaza. Gaza has two borders. Borders with the Israelis that we close it.
And
as you, South African people, close your doors against criminals. Why do you close your doors?
Who said
No.
We only allow criminals. In South Africa, we only allow criminals. We don't allow normal people.
I saw doors closed and protection and everything.
Oh, you're talking about our walls around our houses. I'll talk about it later. Talk about Israel.
No.
There's a lot of talk.
We have also alarm system. Yes. Everybody closed their door. They don't, and don't want the thief to enter their houses in a freeway. So the same is with Gaza. We close the door. In Gaza, the border, because we understand that they want to eliminate Israel, and they declare it in every arena, in every radio, in every time they have the opportunity to say we don't want to see Israelis. So we pull out to the 67 border, and that's not enough. They blame us about settlers. Settlers is a big issue. I don't want to speak about it. But in Gaza, there is no nail of one Israeli settler.
100%.
The Dutch that I knew from my position there, they bought the greenhouses for the people of Gaza.
And?
And now is stockpiles of weapons, of course. Because they decided to be like this. They decided to... to live in poverty, to ask the mercy of the world, and put their women and children as human shields. And you're right. The Israeli, I call it, the ambush of legitimacy. Why? Because if the army or the IDF will kill them, immediately they will say, oh, they killed children and women and everything.
100%, that's what happened. They were shooting behind hospitals, kindergartens. Yeah.
But this is my point. We were smarter. Sometime, you know, we say it in Hebrew, בתחבולות תעשה לך מלחמה. We were smarter. We didn't went into this ambush. We said, we won't kill you. No. You want us? No. We have our regulation. The world sees us, and we will use it against you. And now we can speak freely about Gaza, controlling by a terror organization. The entire world recognized Hamas as a terror organization. And we will show their face, not our ugly face. And this is, but, and this is a reason that sometimes not to use your weapon as you used to is something that it's more sophisticated. And we say also in Hebrew, and maybe you will translate, Ezu Gibor Akoveshet Itzro.
Who is the hero? Who is the hero? The one who can hold himself from killing you.
But do it in a very smart way.
Yeah.
But I have one thing to say. But now you do it in the right way, but explaining to the entire world that everybody here in South Africa, in Russia, in America, in Brazil, they must understand every morning that the Israeli are just and right what they are doing in Gaza, that they close the door, the border.
There's two borders. One border is to Israel. The second border is to Egypt. Egypt don't open the border. Why Egypt doesn't open the border?
I leave it for your thoughts.
All right. For the same reason we don't open the border. They don't open the border. Why they come to us? Because the Egyptians, they can't come to you because the Egyptians don't care. Over and above that, there are people leaving Gaza, but they have to pay the Hamas, $1,000 or something per person, and they don't have the money. So whoever is basically chosen to leave goes straight to Europe.
So for me,
I would give them $1,000 a person, let them go to Europe, and let the European understand what we're suffering.
Yeah. I can say so, Gaza, it's an example for what the Palestinians are doing to us.
To themselves as well.
To themselves and to us. Because everything based on lies. They live in poverty because they decided to live in poverty. Israel offered them a lot of supplies via the border. The Egyptians closed the border. I would like to leave it as a question, a question mark. This is the way that people will think that the Israelis are not so cruel. And if you put the conflict with the Palestinian aside, if you look at Israel, what Israel do for the Palestinian, how they treat him in their hospitals, how they save lives, especially the leader of the Hamas, Yihyeh Sinwar. Yeah, yeah. They saved him life from his cancer. And everything they do to and every place in the world, in Chile, in Japan, in Turkey, in Nepal, the Israelis are coming and bringing their assistance. So they are so cruel as they try to show their face like that.
But why? I mean, you tell me, so the world doesn't know? The world knows, it sees. But like I said before, there's some built-in anti-Semitism that will say, whatever we as a Jewish nation do, we are wrong. Yeah,
Ken.
I just want to ask you a basic question. What is the purpose of your visit to South Africa? You're here, you're in the studio, you're talking about Israel and what's happening there. Who brought you out and are you on a lecture tour? Could you just give our listeners some idea?
So I came here to give lecture. I was here while I was in active duty. I give lecture and somebody found me and asked if I want to come back to South Africa, to Johannesburg. I enjoy my time last time.
When was that?
2012, June.
So a long time ago.
Yeah. Yes, 7 years.
Yeah.
Like Jacob working Lavan to his first wife.
Yes.
So after 7 years, somebody asked me. I received an invitation later. So I went, and of course, your Sasha the star.
Such a star, yeah.
Yeah. She brought me to other communities, and today I'm going to leave to Australia. I received an invitation to give more than 15 lectures in all kind of universities, schools, just people, communities, and et cetera.
Do you travel all over the world? Is this what you do?
I do it in the last couple of years. I basically do it with Americans that I meet while I was in active duty.
Yes.
Because I was in the last position, I was the International Military Cooperation Department, the head of this department. And I met a lot of defense forces from all over the world. And one day I gave a lecture to ex-generals from the United States, and they wrote me that they enjoyed my lecture and they want me to continue. And I said, no, no, sir, I'm going to leave the service. I'm going to retire. This is the time. And he said, okay, I will invite you as a private person. So I continue to work for them every year. I went to Texas. They come here. We talked about issues. As a military person, it's sometimes it's easier to understand what we are talking about security issues, how to defend the state of Israel. But if you take all the military stuff aside, you understand that the main challenge will be the legitimacy.
Would a cynical journalist ask you if you're doing a PR exercise here? You are selling it. You are giving your point of view.
100%. That's the whole idea of it being here.
Okay. Is this wrong?
No. I'm just asking a simple question.
Okay.
All right. We have to go to the advertiser before they're going to get upset. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much, guys. Give us 2 seconds and we'll come back just now. And before the advertiser, just something specially for Moshe. We back with Hani, and we're just going to change a little bit direction. We got only a few minutes. I mean, we've got another 10 or 12 minutes to talk. And, I want to talk about ladies in the army. How's it going? I mean, how the whole thing works. Yesterday or last night, you were talking about the ladies that become warriors. What do you call them? Warriors.
Warriors. Yes,
I remember my wife was in the army, but she was just, a secretary or something.
Okay. Basically, because I'm here in South Africa, so there is a contribution for ladies in the IDF to a lady who immigrated from South Africa and came to Israel, and she wanted to be a pilot in the Air Force, our famous Air Force. And it was in 1994. But before I'll tell about this lady, her name is, she's very famous in Israel, Alice Miller. In every university, they pronounce her name. And I would like to say some words about women. When Ben Gurion tried to organize the new state, and why they tried to have the law of the security service law, they thought about women. And we are really with Western approach, and at that time in the West, we couldn't ask women to come to serve as a compulsory service, as an order, not to volunteer.
I mean, you're talking about what years?
1949.
Or 1949, yeah.
So they didn't know what to do. Even now, just few countries force women to the compulsory service. Just recently, Norway did it. But they found women that can contribute. But in the past...
In Norway. Because the women are big and strong there.
I thought that was in Sweden, Roy.
And also in Sweden. Yes, also in Sweden. Yes.
And they've got big wars there as well. I mean, don't forget.
I spoke about Norway in the Israeli radio, yes. So I know what they were thinking about, how they did it and everything, and in Sweden as well. But I can tell you that at that time, they didn't know what to do. They want to be Western, modern, and they didn't have many soldiers to be in the IDF, and they needed them. So they made what the Jewish always like to do, a compromise. And the compromise was, we will force women to do, but we will give them discounts. Okay? Discounts, I mean, we can free them from duty for many reasons, yeah. And the length of the service will be shorter. So men served 30 months and then 36 months and then less now. And women serve just 24. And as a reservist, men can serve in the beginning till the age of 50 and women just 34. When this lady, Alice Miller, wanted to be a pilot, it was the beginning of the 90s. At that time, Israel had a small revolution about human rights and talking about legal issue. And we know that we can say to a woman, no. But the men, IDF, it's a men domain. They said, no, we can't. The law and all those obstacles. At that time, the president of the state of Israel was Ezer Weitzman. Ezer Weitzman was before Air Force commander. So she had a meeting with the president. And this Alice Miller told him, listen, I'm a Zionist. I came from South Africa. I have a flight license. I can fly. Blah, blah, blah. And he looked at her and said, Meidale, I have to translate it. Meidale, go home, knit socks.
What?
Because our
he was right. I'm not politically correct. Yeah.
Just a minute. Yeah. He actually meant that our pilots are not pilots, really. They are warriors. And you can't compare men to women in this respect, and there are many obstacles, legal obstacles, many. So don't ask us. Go home, knit socks. But she gave a petition to High Court of Justice. And this is not the end of the story, because who was in front?
Who?
Me. No. I was at that time the head of the consulting legislation department, and I had to produce to the Ministry of Justice the answer of the IDF. And who was at that time the Prime Minister and the Minister of Defense, 1994, guys? History, moment of history.
Oh, that's Rabin, eh?
Rabin.
Rabin, yeah.
Rabin didn't want to put women in danger. And he says in the meeting that we participated in that, listen, if instead Ron Arad was our abducted navigator in Lebanon, we will have Ronit is a woman, Ronit Arad, what we can do? Sorry, not now. And we had to defend this position. And the Air Force commander brought me a book, very heavy book, about women in combat that was written for the Americans. And in the Americans, they spoke about the differences between men and women and what the pregnancy can do. And they weren't like us, that it wasn't politically correct to even mention it, even in the beginning of the 90s in Israel. So we were embarrassed. We knew that we are going to lose this case. But we want to be honest. So we made I'm proud of our answer to the High Court of Justice. We said to the High Court of Justice, listen, we think that it's very important to have women in the IDF. But we need to change the laws. Because to train a pilot in 1994, the numbers were $2 million. So if you train a woman, and then a woman said, according to the law, I don't need to stay more.
And if she falls pregnant, and if she gets married, and if she...
Married, she can continue. But pregnancy. So we wanted, in our black dreams, we thought maybe the court will say, okay, take women, but change the law, parliament, please. But November 8, 1995, why I remember this date, because it's my birthday, we received the verdict. Two judges said the IDF is just and right. There were five judges. Yeah. One judge said, no, it's unacceptable, take women. This is their rights, they are equal, take them. Whatsoever. Two judges said, okay, we understand the IDF. So make an experiment. But the IDF is like the Jews they received the Torah. Mm. Immediately they said, Na'aseh v'nishma. So they took a lot of women, two battles, and then they saw that Na'aseh, they have to nishma, to listen. They have many problems with their bones, with their health, and then they made some changes. But the main, that was open the gate. Alice Miller, thank you for that. But the main reason that we can have now warrior in the IDF is the change that we also, my department was responsible for that we made 6 years later in 2000, that we said that while you are a warrior, like a man, your obligation, according to the law that gives you now those discounts, are gone. You are like a man. Men like a man. So this is also to be equal. by the way. Sometimes it was a big difference between the service of men and women. And sometimes we ask ourselves why we can't see men going to the High Court of Justice and say, listen, we are equal, so I want to serve 24.
Why don't they do that?
Because they men.
Here you go. So we've got about a minute.
Okay.
Give me like a closing sentence. I'll ask you a couple of questions afterwards. Give me like a closing sentence. So you work towards women.
If you ask me about women, I think that sometimes.
Yeah.
If you have a salad, you need many ingredients. So men and women are not the same, but they can be together for the better meal, for the better IDF. High rank women, women as a warriors, everybody has to contribute to this IDF. Women and men. And this is
Moshe, you have something to say.
Yes, you know, we're talking about, you know, equality between men and women. Last night, the three referees at the game were women.
Yeah. Yeah, you're
see
right.
It.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You see, it was...
You can't even argue with them.
That's right.
So if you ask me, we need them both. And thank you, Alice Miller.
No, thank you, Alice Miller. No, I'll tell you something. I mean, been in the army, done my service, and I think in my time there was no women. I mean, there were women, but in secretarial positions and in, I don't know.
They weren't in combat.
No, they were not in combat. They were not even close to being combat. And I think everybody must understand the position. I mean, women are not as strong as men. There's nothing you can do. I mean, you
physically,
can't take them away physically.
Yeah.
Physically, but mentally, I think they're stronger. Yeah. To be honest with you. Mentally, I think they're stronger. I mean, think about my wife. I mean, she rules me. I mean, 34 years and I'm crying.
But so. What about doctor in the battlefield?
Yeah, what about that?
She can be.
Yes.
She can be in the battlefield as a doctor.
Maybe she can. Really, maybe she
can. And sometimes, you know, the IDF has many tasks. So to be in a border when you don't need to take with you rockets or something like this, you can have women as warriors. And
I do believe it's very possible. I do believe it's really possible because it's happening now in Caracal unit.
Caracal, of course. But I would like to say something. Who saved a lot of lives of the Israelis? Women.
No, for sure. They're sitting on the fence.
They're sitting and looking. We call it in Hebrew, Tatzpitaniot.
Yes.
And we have a mechanism that those Tatzpitaniot, the observers, can shoot the penetrator. Okay? This system, we call it Roa Yora. In women,
really?
It's...
That's a new one.
See and shoot. Sensor to shooter.
So she sits in the...
We call it in the name of women. Roa, not Roe. Roe is men, and Roa is woman. So, Roa Yora, because basically, the women do this great, great job. So we need men and women in there.
100%. I mean, if the way my house is running, I would have put my wife as a Ramatkal. But that's all right.
Chief of staff.
Chief of staff. 100%.
Again, South Africans open the gate to chief of staff as a woman.
Yeah, South Africans open the gate as well to a flood of criminals, but it's okay. Liel is saying, what is your opinion about the two Democratic congresswomen that are coming to Israel? Would they be allowed to, would you think they're allowed to be into Israel?
Good question. As I told you yesterday, I say good question because I have good answer. But I don't know if I have good answer this time because I want to show you a phenomenon that we have in Israel. Yeah. Many people that are against Israel come enjoy the life in Israel. And it's not like to be in Syria, in the battlefield, etc. Enjoy the free life in Israel, the atmosphere in Tel Aviv, and condemn us. And the question is if we must agree to that, to be in Israel, to enjoy the life, to enjoy the food, to enjoy the sunshine, and then to be with the, those who are going to destroy Israel?
100%.
This is the question.
How can you be lectured from someone like Abu Mazen? How can you be lectured from him when he's talking about he's using our democracy to trying to destroy ourselves, and he never had the election for the last 13 years, but he's talking about us. So guys, I just want you to think about that, and we're going to meet again on Thursday. I want to just thank you so much for being in my studio, and are you flying tonight?
Yes.
So I wish you a very safe trip. I'm sure your family misses you, and what can I say? I love my wife when she goes away.
Well, we handed it over.
I'm sure your husband is partying now.
No, he
spent
the time.
If he knows what's good for him.
He spent the time to see Liverpool and Chelsea.
Here you go. Yeah, the whole time. And I tell my wife the same story, by the way. And let me tell you another thing. Yes. So, when the wife goes away, you pay for one ticket, you enjoy twice.
Thank you.
All right.
It's very informative. And for me, I've learned a lot.
Thank you so much.
I can teach you every day.
But
all right. Thank you so much. I'm going to wish you all good Shabbos. Good Shabbos. And to you, great trip to Israel. And white a pale of, what is it? White a shade of pale. This is for you guys.
Australia. Yeah.